How are you?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Excellent. Excellent. What else can I say?
So did you all have a fire burning over there in southeast France? I was hearing on
Yeah,
the news.
big.
That's not anywhere near you.
No. That's off down on the Côte d'Azur, off down on
Oh, okay.
down near Montpellier, north, inland north of Montpellier. It's
Okay.
in an area called the Gard, but it's under control and it's not unusual. Wildfires are not unusual in that part of France.
Right.
I suppose the intensity, the earliness, actually, that's the point this
Right.
year.
Yeah, right.
We've effectively had heat wave conditions since the end of May. 6 weeks, 7 weeks, 6 weeks
Right.
at this week at this stage, and it's stiflingly hot even up at this altitude. Now, not that high, but
Oh,
600 meters, but
right.
it's stiflingly hot and humid, as in heavy, I mean.
Right. Yeah, the monsoons are trying to kick up here about this time of the year. We get the rainy season in the desert, so the clouds build
Oh,
up
right, okay.
over the mountains, and then by afternoon they tend to build up and a little rain and then dissipate, by late evening. So,
Yeah.
we've gotten a little rain. It's always good in the desert.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm not saying we've got no rain. We've had
Right,
no,
right.
I'm not saying we've had no rain, but the rain we have had is a
Right.
little bit like what you've described, except torrential rain and then gone.
Right.
And gone later that evening. And you would swear it hadn't rained. The ground is so dry.
Right. Wow.
Anyway, you sent me some photo. Well, I've been looking at the photographs. So this is what the universe actually looks like. Now we've photographs of
Well,
what we're part of.
what's interesting, I bought a book several years ago, the Hubble Telescope images, and the resolution on these are obviously much clearer, and they're looking at 13 billion light years versus, 4 billion light years. And it's interesting. The media keeps getting it wrong. I read these little captions under the pictures that say 4 billion, and it's 13 billion. I mean, it's looking that far back in time. And some of these reporters are not actually quite getting this right. But yeah, when you think about it, supposedly the universe from the Big Bang, the theory, it's 14 and a half billion. So the question is, they go back 500 million more years, are they going to actually literally see the spark, that ignited the whole thing? But I have a suspicion that theory may be proven wrong in some way, that we may be in more of a multidimensional reality than we realize, and it's not this 3D thing that we see in a picture. You know what I mean? More of a
Oh,
quantum.
well, the quantum mathematics suggests there's anywhere, depending on which model you look at, between 11 and
Right.
15 different dimensions. And sure, poor little old us animals who think we know it all
Right.
can only see three, can only
That's right.
perceive three. That's only half true. Dennis, sometimes we perceive a little more than that, don't we, when we have
Right.
these flashes of brilliance, flashes of
But
presence.
our thinking is conditioned to think 3D,
Oh,
and
absolutely.
that's the first thing science jumps into. Whereas, many of the new discoveries over the last several years with quantum physics are proving that how we perceive reality affects reality itself, and the observer affects the observation. So with that in mind, then we need to take these images, I think, with a grain of salt, if you know what I mean.
Well, absolutely. Who knows if we're looking back 13 and a half or 13 billion light years, that the next set of images, I think they're going to show 13 and a half billion light
Right,
years ago.
right.
Who knows if that's what we're actually looking at? Gang of scientists say that that's what we're looking at. I don't know. And as you know, because you sent it to me, the link from the Brazilian university, whose name I cannot pronounce, about the latest research into the fact that there's no reality. There's no such thing as objective reality. Psychologists know that in their own simple little way from what you've just mentioned, the observer effect. We've known that for donkey's years. Neuroscience has looked at it from the perspective of actually one of the mechanisms that the Brazilian research actually used, you know, the dual slot photons of light through the dual slot, and they end up on a wavelength like a barcode on a receiver screen, except if you observe them, they don't. They look like two bars. But if you observe it on the way through and then stop observing it again, it behaves like a wavelength again. And that's what the Brazilian research was saying. You know, light behaves, wave behavior and particle behavior are not mutually exclusive.
Right.
So we don't know what the hell we're looking at, really.
It's not an either or. It's
No.
You know.
But
that gets back to thinking itself. We like to put everything in a box.
Oh, absolutely.
It's this or it's that. It's, you know, it's either or, it's black or white, it's up or down, it's that judgmental.
Yes, it's Republican or Democrat.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Well, isn't it interesting, actually? You know, you've mentioned things like black and white, up and down. What about good and evil?
Right, same thing, yeah.
Yeah. No man is wholly good. Obviously, just to be ensure that we cover all our bases here. No person is all wholly good or wholly bad.
Right. And the question... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
And I was just going to say, no person is beyond redemption. And what I hate using that word, but what I mean is, you know, the story that I was telling you, I think, whether it was the last time we talked or the previous time, about the lady who, when I met her for the first time, she said, oh my God, I've wasted the first 59 years of my life. Why didn't I meet you 20 years ago? Nobody's beyond redemption. It doesn't matter what happened in the past. Actually, it doesn't matter what happened 13.5 billion years ago, if you look at it from that perspective. What matters is what's going on now and how I'm behaving myself now. And most importantly, whether I've turned up to now, which is the whole premise of conscious leadership.
You know, the whole idea of redemption is based on a premise that there's some guilt and need for forgiveness for something that is not happening now, something that may or may not have happened years ago. So in truth, just the realization of our kind of innate, innocence in the present moment, is there really anything we do need to forgive?
Oh no!
By giving that energy, we're in a sense recreating a past image, which detracts from our experience in the present.
Well, it's also
a distraction,
Dennis. It also distracts from who we really are.
Right.
I was talking to somebody recently who is very much into his Christian faith. And I said to him, we could discard modern science completely and just look at the New Testament, in particular, the Gospels in the New Testament, and look at who we're told we are. You know, we're part of the universe. We're children of God. We're supposed to live our lives, and we're supposed to live our lives to the full. Now, and that's because that's the only time you can actually do it.
Right.
I had a really interesting conversation with an insightful conversation with a business leader in the Valley in California a fortnight ago. And he was talking about his business plans, not so much his business plans, his vision for the business. And he said to me, he said, do you think I deserve it? It's not really that's so insightful, because you know this idea that I don't deserve something is what permeates our understanding that we are in need of some kind of redemption.
Right. And literally holds us back from accepting what is, which, you know, we're our worst enemy, in a sense, where we block these things from manifesting, if you want to use that word lightly, without getting into the quote woo-woo, manifesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, sorry. But I go with manifest. I mean, there's a lot of woo-woo, as you said, attached to that word. But it doesn't matter. You and I know what we're talking about.
It's create. It's how we are, in a sense, creators of our reality by our thoughts and beliefs and what we put out there. So if that CEO feels like he doesn't deserve it, likely he won't. He and his company will not.
He's not going to get it. He's not going to get it if he thinks he doesn't deserve it.
It may go to the point where he actually sabotages his own success, which I've seen with clients of mine, where the senior leaders are actually working against each other and not achieving their vision and their mission, because there is some of that feeling, well, do we really deserve it? And therefore, they spend a lot of energy sabotaging their own teamwork.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, but Dennis, what person using their mind normally doesn't sabotage themselves?
Yep.
Because as you said earlier on, you prefaced your remarks by saying, in a sense. It's not in a sense. I mean, it's a scientific fact that how we perceive things, which is based on what we're thinking about what we're perceiving, creates our version of reality.
Right. And that actually, if I can kind of jump on that, that article I've posted on the Conscious Leader LinkedIn website, if anybody's listening to this recorded in the future, there's a Gallup, what's called the Gallup Global Emotion Report for 2022. And I just think this ties nicely into what you just said, Willie, on how I think as leaders of organizations, what we think and believe and what we put out there creates that emotional culture. You know, we think of a corporate culture, but when we look at how the report basically showed, you know, a nosedive in positive emotions and an increase in negative emotions over the last, actually, this goes back to 2012. This isn't something that's just happened in the last year or two with COVID. This goes back to 2012. And so I think, you know, if you look at the research, what they do is they segment it by countries. And it's interesting that many of the highest positives or lowest negatives are from third world countries, whereas the industrialized European, American, other countries that tend to be more affluent, who probably tend to be more wrapped up in their thoughts and thinking and worrying and stressing out, are scoring the lowest. Whereas those poorer countries or the people perhaps have a more sense of satisfaction and just living, getting up every day and enjoying their day, regardless of their environmental circumstances, have actually scored higher than the more industrialized countries. So I find that a very interesting finding in that.
It puts me in mind of a piece of research. It's probably from about 2011, 2012, that people in New York wanted the lifestyle that tribes people in the Amazon basin have.
Well.
You know, no worries. You get your food. An odd day you mightn't get your food, but you know, you'll have put by something for that. You sit down at night, you tell stories, you play games, you entertain each other, you go to bed without a care in the world, other than the fact that, you know, I'm wondering, you know, actually they're probably not wondering about whether there'll be food next month. They're probably not. I don't know. But the summary of the research was the people on the Eastern Seaboard, particularly New York, want the lifestyle that tribes people in the Amazon already have. Yeah. You know from our previous conversations that it's the World Health Organization that says that barring a pandemic, more people will die in the developed world in the 21st century from stress than the next five causes of death put together. And the pandemic, they weren't talking about COVID, because COVID, the deaths from COVID in the developed world pale into insignificance in comparison to the deaths that are related to stress-related diseases. And we do it to ourselves. And
exactly.
Chief executives do it to their teams, and teams do it to each other.
Exactly.
And the culture, and so the culture flows down the organization, and people who've sold their soul to some crazy dysfunctional organization, because people are using their minds normally and actually actively creating the chaos that creates stress. You know, that you've had a client who was that soldier at one point along the way. Assume they're a little bit further along the way at this stage. And it's all make believe.
Right.
We shouldn't really be talking about it. We should be talking about it the other way around, shouldn't we?
I was just gonna go in that direction. We're thinking the same thing here, but I was looking at the definitions from the Gallup survey. What they considered positive was well rested, treated with respect, smiling and laughter, learning and enjoyment. That was the positive emotional definition. The negative was a feeling of pain, worrying, sadness, stress, and anger. So when I look at these, I'm thinking, you know, what are the root causes of these negative things? Worrying, sadness, stress, anger, these are...
They're all taught, all taught. All thoughts.
You're right.
Every single
projection.
One
of it's either a thought projected into the past or a thought projected into the future. What is worry? You're thinking about something that probably will never ever happen. The anger comes from something usually that happened in the past that you're ripping up into the present and then allowing yourself to be triggered. So I'm thinking about that. Then when I saw the positive, I went back to your mindfulness assessment index and the different, was there five or six different big areas when you do that?
Yeah, yeah.
The mindfulness that gets into resting, the enjoyment, the worthiness, being treated with respect, those kinds of things that, it always comes back to the person, to the self of, you know, the world reflects how you feel about yourself, and then it's just like a mirror. So, you know, I'm thinking about this, you know, for CEOs again and other leaders, the most toxic influence is a leader who does not realize that they're creating a virus. If they talk about a virus, if they're in a perpetual negative state, and communicating all these negative kinds of thoughts, that just creates the viruses within the organization, that creates the toxic culture. And then you wonder why, you know, these trends are on a downward trend. I'm not blaming it on the CEO, but I'm just saying, I think leaders have more power than they realize, in influencing this. Yeah. I mean, this goes for politics too, not just company. I mean, think of that.
Let's look at it the other way around. And let's look at how you create. And I don't like the word culture, but we'll run with it. Let's look at how you create a positive culture. And first of all, preface it by saying it's actually hard work to create a negative culture. You really have to work hard at being a bad person. I was nearly going to use bad language. You have to work hard at being a horrible person. You have to work hard at stirring up negative emotions. You have to work hard at not getting on with people.
Right.
Whereas to create a positive culture, to create the joy that you're talking about and the value that you're talking about and the happiness that you're talking about and the restedness that you're talking about, all you have to do is turn up. You don't actually have to do anything else.
Right.
Because the latest science, I mean, we can marvel at the pictures that NASA are showing us at the moment. But you know, the latest neuroscience about how when I'm present and my energy is congruent and my energy is harmonious and resonant, how that in that particular state of being, not just state of mind, state of being, I literally emit photons of light as a result of the electromagnetic coherence in my energy field that sends out messages to other people. Right. And the messages are, if I'm in that state, let's spread the joy. Let's spread the vision. Let's spread what we believe we can achieve here, rather than let's spread the virus, as you said a minute ago.
Right.
All you have to do is turn up. It's debatable whether you even have to have a vision or not. I mean, you know, Jobs and Wozniak, neither of whom are, you know, absolute paragons of virtue. But when they were tinkering around in Jobs' parents' garage, putting together the very first Mac, they didn't have a vision for what Apple turned out to be. They were doing their thing.
Right.
So it's debatable whether you even have to have a vision. In fact, it's debatable. Let's be controversial about this. It's debatable whether having a vision, which in the normal corporate world translates into vision, values, and strategic plan, and all that good stuff, or possibly bad stuff, because maybe it constrains you. I know plenty of organizations
who
have constrained themselves by saying this is what we want to achieve, and the sky isn't the limit.
Right. Yeah, I just saw a little post, Simon Sinek, who wrote the book about starting with why for an organization, how most companies' employees have not explained the why of their existence to their own people. And so they come to work every day with no purpose. And his premise is that all these companies now are looking for, quote, passionate people, you know, put their heart and soul into what they do. And his premise is purpose fuels the passion, not the other way around, that there's a feeling and intention that your values are, for example, in alignment with the company's values. And there's something bigger than you that you're going to work for every day. And it's that purpose that then creates the passion that then creates things like enjoyment and you know, laughter and satisfaction, all the things they're trying to get at the workplace. And I heard somebody the other day saying, again, it's kind of like the vision, that you don't need some kind of esoteric purpose. You are your purpose. Which it's kind of an open-ended, you know, now what the heck does that mean? You are your purpose. Well, you know, you don't have to be a Mother Teresa or whoever, Elon Musk, trying to save the world. Your own existence and what you have to contribute in your own way in itself is in a sense good enough to be passionate about who and what you are. So I don't know if you have any reaction to that, William.
It's kind of bizarre, because I had a conversation that almost mirrors this with online program owners last Wednesday night, because people get tied up in timelines, they get tied up in how-tos, and they get tied up in what I am trying to achieve. So there you have the how, the what, and the when. And I said to them, you don't need to know any of those three things. There's, you know, someone inside you that if you turned up and released that potential, he or she already knows all that. All you need to know is the why. That's all you need to know. And, you know, as I said to them as well, and I know why. And I know your why. And it goes back to what we were saying a few minutes ago and what you've just said in relation to, you know, you are the why or you are the purpose. And it goes back to my purpose when I got up this morning was to live today to the full.
Right.
That's what the good book says, even, as I said earlier on, to live life and live life to the full. I can be passionate about that. And if you get a group of people together who are passionate about that, and then there's some kind of corporate why as well. Yeah, right. Okay. Not 100% sure about the leader and the leadership juice that they spread out through the organization is even more important than some kind of idea of a joint why. Because if the leader knows his why or her why, he's going to transmit that or she is going to transmit that.
So I've got this image and I'm kind of toying with a little kind of a dangerous framework for leadership on how the leader is like a tuning fork and what you're trying to create is resonance, almost a vibratory resonance between your workforce. And it's interesting that human resource and Gallup calls it a force. It's a work force. Well, what the heck is a force? Well, force is an energy, right? So when I think about some of the research that HeartMath Institute's done with energy and resonance and coherence of energy fields from human beings, I'm thinking essentially this is what's unconsciously happening in most companies, but the leaders and the employees have no awareness if this is what's really going on.
Yeah.
But I really do think there is a resonance or lack of resonance, and that's what causes, you know, the challenges, problems versus the harmony and the cohesion and a more focused, intentional organization that becomes very successful because they've created this kind of an energy resonance within their workforce. And they do that through many different things. But I'm kind of toying with this idea as a quantum view of management and leadership, that there are these energy systems that CEOs unconsciously and leaders are working with, but they don't know that they're doing it. They're just kind of doing it. And you know, you don't have to have elaborate theory to do it.
Nor do you
it's
have
very
to.
Very natural.
Nor do you have to know the science behind it, nor do you have to know any of that stuff.
But it is kind of helpful to see how this works
very,
with energy.
Very strange. I had a conversation on Monday with somebody, and I said to her, what are you? She's head of a particular organization in Europe. And I said to her, what are you actually looking for? I said, can you put it in one word? And do you know what her word was? Harmony.
Well, there you go.
And I said to her, you mean like a tuning fork? And she said, yeah, harmony.
There you go.
And I said to her, and what happens with a tuning fork if you put your finger on it? It's back to the blocking that you were talking about earlier on.
Right.
Because you stop the harmony. You sow discord.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, you know, and I know that we're just bundles of energy. And, you know, if we're suffering from all of those negatives that you talked about earlier on, and by the way, there's some interesting research in just how toxic anger and hostility is and how it'll kill you quicker than any of the other things that you mentioned. But if you go back to that list, all of those things come from my energy, my bundle of energy being, and I know this isn't a word, disharmonious. But it's better than unharmonious. Disharmony is a word, isn't it?
Incoherent, you know, versus coherent. That's a way.
Absolutely. But the tuning fork is a wonderful metaphor for the whole thing, because I am either vibrating coherently, to use the word that you've just said, or I'm vibrating incoherently. We know a lot of incoherent people. Even their language is incoherent.
So, Willie, I'd just like to point something out here for any future listeners to this recording, but you've already now mentioned several things that in my mind are very great examples of synchronicity. The fact that we haven't talked in over a month And you've had some things in the last 2 days or a week that I have brought up that are resonating because, you know, there's some coherence here, obviously, between your experiences and mine. And we bring these things up, and this isn't the first time we've had this kind of a conversation where one of us will bring up something and the other will say, you know, that's interesting. 2 days ago, I was just talking to somebody. So I'm pointing this out because when people talk about being in the flow and being in these states of coherence, the more aware I think a person is, the more frequent you observe synchronicity in your day-to-day so-called mundane life. I think there's probably more synchronicities in a single day than we can even count on our fingers, but we're just not aware enough to sense those synchronicities and to kind of draw attention to those. But
interesting enough, I was talking to somebody about synchronicity last week as well, because we were making
there the you point. Go again.
I know, there you go again. I know. Well, you see, we were talking about synchronicity and the way in which, if you're in flow, you'll find the right bits of information at the time. You'll bump into the right people at the right time, and you don't even need to be talking to people. Sometimes you'll come across an article that gives you the nugget that maybe you don't even know you're looking for at the time. But the fact is that our days are full of opportunity, but an opportunity only becomes a synchronicity when I know my why. Now there's research in relation to that, really interesting research, very recently from neuroscience. A synchronicity isn't a synchronicity until I recognize it as a synchronicity. It takes us right back to the start of this conversation and the observer effect.
Right.
So I need to know my why.
You've got to be awake to realize that you are awake. In other words, if you're asleep, you may be awake in a dream, which people are when they're asleep, but to be awake while you're awake, you've got to wake up. And so this what you're talking about to me, and you know, I don't want to overuse the word awakening, but it's right in front of us. It's at the tip of our nose. We just miss it because we're too busy being busy and thinking and doing, and we don't have enough time for being. So we're just
It's DeMello and awakening. I'm fine with awakening. It's DeMello's book Awareness, where I think he uses the phrase "wake up" four times on the first page, and he makes the point, and I'm probably butchering or paraphrasing him. He makes the point that if, for example, you are angry or you're hostile, to go back to what we were talking about earlier on, recognizing that you're angry, say, rather than just running with the anger and letting it poison your day or poison your life, recognizing that you're angry is not the first step on the road to self-awareness. It is self-awareness.
Right.
And so you're awake because you're awake and you realize that you're angry. Well, as you say, you need to be awake to realize you're awake. And the beauty of it is that that's all a leader has to do. Wake up.
Yeah, I think the whole paradigm of leadership and management needs to be revamped. And the MBA programs, one of which I went through many years ago, was very siloed and segmented, focusing on finance and accounting and marketing and these things. And it really, I mean, one of the reasons I use the Baldrige framework over here in the USA, because it's more holistic and it draws these connecting integrative principles, is what I want to call it. In fact, the Baldrige criteria, they use the word alignment. And they're saying if your organization's out of alignment, you're working against yourself, and you and it's not surprising that you're not successful. You don't have happy employees, you don't have happy customers, and you're not making money because you're there's this misalignment, which gets back to the resonance. To me, that's that energy resonance. Now, Baldrige doesn't use words like energy, although they do use workforce, but I think the management schools and the MBA programs around the world need some quantum injection of realizing the art and science of management and leadership, you know, needs to be upgraded here for the 21st
Oh, yeah. There
century from
may
this
be.
com the command and control and all these even 19th century management principles that have carried over
Oh,
into the
yeah.
21st
Oh, yeah.
century, you know.
But, Dennis, what you said there a minute ago in relation to incoherent leadership teams not meeting their targets, unhappy employees, organizations not making money. That doesn't describe failing organizations. That describes almost every organization. Because organizations that are making money and patting themselves on the back for making money have only seen a fragment of what is possible if they only woke up. You know, most organizations will pat themselves on the back for being better than their competitors when they are actually, it's a competition between mediocrities because they haven't woken up. They don't know what's possible. Ah, yes.
Food for thought.
A mess. Oh, no. Food for action. Food for
Yes,
action.
for action. I know after I said the word thought, I knew you were gonna say something.
Pounce on the
Excuse me, I don't mean to do a violent action here, but there's enough of that
word
going
thought.
on in the
Maybe we're
world.
just shooting the breeze.
Yeah, there you go.
Cool. All right.
Well, I think we're planting some seeds here, and
Well,
you know, I want to.
I emailed some people again earlier on today. I posted
I
again
saw that.
on our Facebook, or not on our Facebook group, on our LinkedIn group earlier today. I'm going to up it a bit because I want to. I mean, these conversations are in many ways amazing. You would swear, and now I'm obviously going to edit this, but you'd swear we had scripted some of the conversation that we had today, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you? I
I
mean,
have no
sorry,
script. Right,
a cynic, and I don't mean Simon Cynic. A
right, right.
cynic would say, "Aha, they're just saying that."
But you know, it obviously is what it is, and I'm thinking any listener on LinkedIn who would like to click on any of these, this talk and others where we've had some dialogues, I think the content is going to always be current. For no matter what's going on in that person's life or even the world. So, you know, I think this is a flow. It's an evolution of a dialogue, a conscious conversation, at times controversial, as we put it, that will continue to grow and evolve. And who knows where this is leading to. And as you and I have both agreed, it doesn't matter. We're not seeking an outcome here. We're
Well,
allowing this to unfold.
we I know why I do this. I know the why.
Well, I enjoy it. I mean, I do it for.
I'm having fun apart from anything
Well,
else.
me too.
Yeah.
That's basically why I'm doing it.
Yeah.
There's no
So
monetary incentive here. I'm.
that's the why. I don't know any
Right.
I was talking to somebody a few days ago. Oh yes, I was talking to I had a long conversation with a group of people last week about people doing things that they hadn't planned to do and realizing later on that it happened to be exactly the right thing at that moment in time because it led them in a particular direction. And I was saying, you know, sometimes I do things and it might be weeks or months or in one case, years later that I understand why I actually did something that was seemingly unplanned, spontaneous at the time.
Right.
And I don't know why I'm doing this, other than the fact that I'm enjoying myself. There's no motive other than doing
right.
it. And we don't know where it'll lead, because all we're doing is doing our thing.
Right. I feel the same way. It's you know, some discovery ahas going on, but also some examples of synchronicity that are happening in these conversations that, as you say, we're not scripted. We don't talk to each other for 30 days. We get together and then we find our own little connecting pieces that have occurred in the last 30 days.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're part of a larger energy field, as they say. So I'm not surprised that we have these synchronicities because of what we share. I think as a planet right now, what the whole world seems to be going through with lots of change and challenges. And I think, you know, that providing some kind of framework for navigating the world as it is, it can be helpful for some folks just to listen, you know, in on some of these conversations. So,
or the world as people think it is.
Exactly.
And I think it was Shakespeare, right. And I'm going to misquote this guy now as well, who said there was nothing is either good or bad, but thinking make it so. It's all down to thought. All right, Dennis.
All right, sounds good.
I'm going to try and get some cool air somewhere. I don't know. That's probably a futile exercise, but there you are.
I'm headed off to Fresno next week to spend several days with my Baldridge client. They're going to get a site visit for their for their state Baldridge application. So I'm kind of excited for them. So yeah, we'll be in touch and set up our.
I will see you soon.
Right. Definitely.
And I'll put this online. It'll be online as quick as I can immediately after this, and I'll put another reminder in our LinkedIn group as well.
Sounds good.
That it's online. All right. Cool.
Excellent.
Good to see you. It's good to see you looking so well as well.
Good to see you too.
All right.
Yeah, things are good.
So. Excellent, Dennis. Have a good one.
Take care.
Bye.
Talk to you soon.
Bye. Bye. Bye.